not in the ear, but in the mind. By Ditto Memphit. Read by the Dragon Girl on the occasion of Ditto Memphit's birthday. Happy birthday, Dets. Oin has never let a damn thing stop him from doing what he felt was right.
You're an idiot. Get off,
Gloin said angrily, jerking his head away from his brother's hands.
And get out of the way. I've got to get back there and teach that damn fool a lesson. I've an argument or two he won't forget in a hurry. You're an idiot who's going nowhere,
Oin said sternly, and he pressed the cloth back to Gloin's bleeding temple.
You're going to be one big bruise in the morning as it is.
You fuss worse than Ma,
Gloin grumbled, and he made another half-hearted attempt to get away. Oin's heavy hand on his shoulder stopped him, however.
You should be glad I'm willing to patch you up at all. Should see the other one,
Gloin said, and he threw out his chest proudly. At only 37 years of age, it was not all that impressive a sight.
I'm sure,
Oin said, dry as dust.
Why were you fighting anyway?
Gloin scowled, bristling.
He gave me insult. I couldn't let that sort of thing slide, could I? Our family honor's at stake. I had to see him eat his words.
Our family honor's not all that pristine, considering.
Oin took away the cloth and checked the deep cut on his brother's forehead. It had stopped bleeding, but it would scar. Well, something to impress the ladies, he supposed.
Hold still now. That's going to need some ointment. Still think it's a dumb name,
Gloin muttered.
Oin ignored him and scooped a fingerful of his newest concoction from a jar.
If he was a little cavalier in applying it, well, that was only right and proper, wasn't it?
When Gloin had stopped his complaining, unlikely, but Oin could always hope, and the bandage was well and truly secured around his empty red head, Oin wiped off his hands and asked, as mildly as he was able,
So, what was this insult?
At that, Gloin clammed up like a glowering stone and would not say another word. Oin narrowed his eyes at his younger brother, but Gloin's gaze skittered away.
Harumphing,
Oin turned away and began packing his things into their bag.
I'll be checking on you in a couple of hours. I want to see how the new ointment's working.
I'm not an experiment.
No, you're an idiot. I already said,
Oin said gruffly. Shouldering his bag, he turned back to where Gloin sat like a belligerent thundercloud.
Get some rest.
Gloin pressed his lips together, but nodded.
And thank you for defending me, lad,
Oin added, more gently. Gloin's head snapped up, and his eyes widened.
Who told... Nobody,
he interrupted.
But it don't take a genius to figure it out. No, lie back and sleep. I'll be back in a few hours to check on that ointment.
But they were making sport of you. How can you just let that sort of talk slide by?
Gloin burst out, all impulsive youth and hair-trigger temper and frustration.
How do you do it?
Easy.
Oin patted his shoulder, and then firmly pushed him back down on the bed.
I don't listen.
You can't be serious!
Oin continued to pack, his rucksack open on the table before him. His cousin Dees stood in the doorway, her hair coming out of its braids.
I'm known for a joke or two, but this isn't one of them,
he said calmly.
It's suicide, Oin. Please talk to them. You're sensible. You're one of the oldest and wisest. They'll listen to you.
The once princess pulled at her beard in frustration,
I've shouted till I'm blue in the face. But their hearts and minds are full of the treasure of Thror, and they won't hear a thing. It was odd, Oin thought, as he pulled the drawstring tight on another bag of herbs. The Dis thought he was more likely to listen than any of the others. After all, he was the deaf one.
"I've read the portents," he said,
and with his non-horn hand, he lifted a glass vial to his eyes to gauge the level. Almost out of tincture of willow bark.
"Everything points our way, cousin. We'd be fools to waste this moment."
She looks at him helplessly.
"Not you, too."
He smiled. Kindly, certainly, but without apology.
"Sorry, lass."
She gritted her teeth.
"Then can't you convince Thor not to take my boys? They're too young, far too young to go."
"Dis, I've been hard-pressed to stop Gimli from bundling himself up in my things, or sneaking along behind us. Feely and Keely are older, and have reached their majority. They can make their own decisions."
He did not add,
"And if you believe I can convince Thorin of anything, perhaps you think I can argue with Smaug himself."
"Oin, please, won't you reconsider?"
She had tears standing in her eyes. He put down his medicines and crossed to her, to give her a warm kiss upon her brow.
"No,"
he said, and smiled once more.
"I'll watch him, though. For you. No matter what befalls us, I'll keep an eye on him. Pair of daft rascals need watching. That's Mahal's own truth."
She let out a breath between her teeth, deflating in defeat.
"Then that's all I can hope for," she said,
and closed her eyes.
No.
Oin shook her gently, and when she looked up at him, he gave her an encouraging look.
"As I said, I read the portents. Don't you listen to them naysayers. This is the time, Dis. Our time. We'll have our home again. Everything points to it."
"How can you be so sure?"
she demanded tearfully.
"I ain't sure. Nothing's sure. But I can hope."
He gave her a one-armed hug, and then drew her into his close, stuffy little room.
"No, can I get you a cuppa or anything?"
"I'm nearly grown!"
Oin hugged the boy tight.
"Why do Feely and Keely get to go, and not me? It's not fair!"
Gimli sniffled, and wiped his nose upon his sleeve.
"I could go fight dragons. I could! You need every dwarf. Why are you leaving me behind?"
Oin stifled a sigh, and simply held the boy tighter. It was tempting to lay aside his horn, but Gimli knew that tactic all too well.
"I'm already the best out of all my friends with an axe."
Gimli's face, for all his declared maturity, was settling into a decided pout. Oin strangled the urge to laugh at him, and only nodded in sympathy.
"Want to go on a mighty quest?"
the boy mumbled rebelliously, and Oin scruffed his messy red hair.
"You will,"
he said.
"You will. Didn't I read them portents? Well, this one ain't your quest, laddie. Yours'll be different. But you'll do great things, nephew. I know you will."
"You don't listen when someone says no to you,"
Gimli said, fisting his small hands in Oin's shirt front.
"Please, tell them to take me."
"No, lad,"
was all Oin said in return. Gimli stared up at him, before he slumped. His face, beard still wispy and patchy, began to crumple.
"I'll bring you back a dragon's claw,"
Oin promised him.
"And more gold than you've ever dreamed of."
"Bring me an adventure, and that'll be twice as good,"
Gimli muttered, with the sulky flippancy of all adolescence. Oin tugged one of his braids affectionately, before he stood and left the lad's room. Gloin was waiting without, shifting from foot to foot.
How'd he take it?
About as well as you'd expect.
Oin spied the mug of beer on the kitchen bench and made a beeline for it. Gloin stepped in front of him, all fatherly concern.
But he'll stay? Not happily.
Oin pushed his brother out of the way and lifted the mug, taking a sip with a sigh.
He's right about one thing, brother. He's nearly old enough. You won't keep him at hearth and home for much longer.
Gloin blew out a gusty breath and casually stole the mug from Oin's hands and took a great swig.
I know. Still, so long as he listens for now.
You can't eat that!
The high, frantic shout had come from their company's newest member. Oin blinked and straightened, fumbling upon the grass beside him for his horn.
Eh?
You'll get a terrible rash!
Bilbo stumbled away from their little camp, his eyes wide and his hands waving wildly.
That stinging nettle, that is. It'll get into your skin, and you'll itch terribly for days.
Oin blinked at him for a moment, and then snorted, and turned back to his harvesting.
"Perhaps it might get into hobbit skin, Master Baggins," said Dory kindly. "It's tremendously painful and itchy," Bilbo protested, and he gave Oin worried glances that were rather irritating. He didn't wish to alarm the little fellow, but by Durin's bald left buttock, he knew what he was doing.
Oin tuned out the hobbit's fussing. My word, could he fuss! And began to hum to himself. It was a large, fine nettle bush, and should make plenty of tea. The rest of the leaves he could give to Bombur, for adding to stews and the like. All in all, a fortuitous find. Eventually, he had what he wanted, and straightened out of his hunched position with a curse and a lengthy scratch. His back protested the move, and he had to concede that perhaps he wasn't as young as he once was. Gathering his horn, his bag of nettles, and his knife, he trudged over to where the hobbit sat, watching anxiously. There, he lifted his hands for inspection. Bilbo's eyes snapped to his gloved fingers, and he let out a small, "Oh." Then he scowled. Such an expressive, curious little creature.
Well, why didn't you say?
Oin gave him a sly wink.
I know my business, Master Baggins. In fact, you might even say I'm an expert.
Bofur chuckled for a good 20 minutes at that, until Biffer got annoyed and threw a bread roll at him. And when they reached Rivendell, all those damned vegetables made nettle tea something of a necessity. Speaking of Master Baggins, it did not escape Oin that he wasn't the most popular of the company. Though he couldn't hear the jokes, he could very well see the stifled laughter on Keeley's face, the sneer on Nori's, and the contempt on Dwalin's, as they watched the hobbit trying to ride his pony. It was true that he was atrocious, but he was willing to give it a go. Surely that was laudable. That night's camp was a rather tiresome repeat of the usual mockery and betting, coin changing hands and laughter filling the air. To be frank, Oin was sick to the teeth of this particular source of merriment. Grabbing his bowl from Bombor's hand, he marched straight past his brother and plunked himself heavily next to the hobbit. Gloin, never soft-spoken at the best of times, had been loudly guffawing at Beaufort's mimicry of Bilbo's riding. He stopped mid-word, his mouth hanging open.
"What are you doing?" Bilbo hissed.
"Eh?"
"I said..." "Oh, never mind," huffed Bilbo,
and he darted a glance back at the rest of the company. Oin didn't bother asking again. After all, If it had been important, Bilbo would have repeated it. He stretched out his legs, stiff from so many hours in the saddle, and began to shovel his stew into his mouth. The hobbit gave him another quizzical look, before tentatively bending to his own meal once more. Oin ignored the lot of them, the gormless looks of his people, the puzzlement of Bilbo, the smugness of the bloody wizard, and concentrated on his food.
"Good, this,"
he said aloud to Bombur, who nodded wordlessly. The next day, it appeared that Balin had taken it upon himself to teach the hobbit how to ride his pony properly, rather than like a sack of gravel. It seemed that it was Oin's fate to be interrupted by busybody royals when he was trying to pack his bags.
"You too,"
Dane said, and a flash of weary sorrow crossed his face, before it was swiftly hidden.
"Aye."
Oin didn't bother elaborating. He squinted at the chest of medical and herb lore books that took up most of his baggage. The rest of the party would complain about the weight of it, but it would need to come along anyway.
"Suppose you wouldn't listen to me if I asked you not to?"
Dane leaned against the door jamb, his arms folding. He'd grown grey and tired since unexpectedly assuming the crown, and his once brash ways had become softer and calmer. Peace reigned in the north between elf and dwarf, but for some, it was not enough. Oin grasped for his horn, now made of solid silver, and ringed with rubies and emeralds, and pointedly put it to his ear with a flourish.
"No, want to repeat whatever that was?"
"What's the point?"
Dane tugged on the boar tusk in his mustache, squinting at Oin thoughtfully.
"I suppose you've heard my answer to Balin, then?"
I heard."
Oin gave his cousin a wry grin.
"But I don't always listen."
"You know that it's nigh impossible, that you're likely walking to your death."
"People have said that to me before."
Oin's sidelong glance was loaded.
"As you well know, King of Erebor."
Dane huffed a laugh, sour and unhappy.
"So Balin reminded me. I'm trying to save your fool lives, and I won't give my permission or blessing. But you'll go anyway."
"I'm not packing to go to the seaside here, Your Highness,"
Oin said, turning to face the king fully.
"I know the portents are mixed. On the one hand, they speak of a new age in Durin's halls, soon to arise. On the other, a fire and ruin and shadow. The orcs are scattered since the battle, and Khazad-dûm is no longer the realm of Azog and his foul kin. Despite all the danger and uncertainty, we've got to try, before we lose all hope of regaining our first and greatest home. And before I'm too old for such things,"
he thought ruefully, but did not add.
"You brought us to Erebor. Wasn't that enough?"
Dane said, and he shook his grizzled head.
"Oin. Cousin."
"Balin's also my cousin, Dane, and I'll be staying by his side and following his lead, even without your say-so."
Oin raised his chin.
"And if you think you can outstubborn me, you don't know much about our branch of the family."
Dane grinned.
"Anything like the rest?" "Worse."
The king let out a soft laugh, before he stepped away from the door and crossed to grip Oin by the forearm.
"Stay. Don't go throwing your life away."
Oin rolled his eyes.
"If you're going to jabber at me, Majesty, you might as well be useful. Put those glass vials in that case, and be gentle about it. They cost a pretty penny from the Glassblowers Guild, let me tell you."
Dane's eyes closed for a split second. Then he did as he was bid.
"You can't!"
"Go!"
Oin roared, and he whirled back to the west gate once more.
"Run, back to the records chamber. I shall hold the gate, buy you more time."
Oin, you have to run. Run now! Cried another member of his party. There's still the stairs. It can't move far from the water, and we could blockade. Oin shook away the blurred, indistinct words, his staff twirling around his head and his sword dripping in his hand.
Get out of here!
He barked, and hacked at a tentacle.
No!
Oin, come on! But Oin didn't listen. His attention was locked onto the monstrous, stinking thing that rose out of the waters and lunged for him, showing a ring of gaping, yellowing teeth.
Run!
He screamed, and his sword bit into the creature again and again. The faint sound of booted feet retreating sent relief coursing through him, and he raised his staff and sword in defiance.
Do Bakar!
He roared, and charged at the monster. A few seconds. He could buy them a few more seconds. His horn clattered to the ground and was crushed flat beneath the vile, bloated bag of its body. The end.